We're back, and a lot has happened in the last week. Liam, it's been a hell of an eventful week all round. We've had team announcements, we've had two games, and rather a lot of happening around there, which we're going to be talking about. And we've had a Springbok team for the penultimate warm-up game before the World Cup. A lot happening.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where we don't actually even know where to start. It was also difficult to just refine what we're going to talk about during this podcast. So, you know, if you're going to try and stick to time, it's going to be a challenge. But yeah, but an awful lot has happened. I mean, the World Cup is now almost upon us and it will only get worse.
It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell.
Oh, let's go straight into it. We're not going to waste time today. So straight into it, Springbok selection against Wales. I think very much what we expected, other than maybe a Faf and Eben, pretty much close to their first team. Maybe Dwayne as well. Maybe that and Kanan coming in there on the wing. Those are probably the only four real positions I can really see changing before we go into that first game against Scotland.
Yes, I mean, Jacques Dinauber did intimate that they would select in these last two games a team that will resemble their strongest lineup. And this one actually isn't that surprising, because if you think of the team that will play the All Blacks, you would think that that would probably be as close to a proper dress rehearsal for the opening game of the World Cup. So the names you have mentioned, the omissions for Saturday, you know, kind of tallies with that, because you're sort of edging your way, as it were, closer to, you know, the best 15 or the best 23. So for me, very few surprises. I think I'm quite excited about the Jean Klein, Erchis Neyman combination in the second row. Obviously, there's the strong Munster connection. You know, they obviously know each other inside out. So I'm quite excited to see that. And yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the selections on the wing, a guy like Moody, you know, momentum certainly in his favour. Colby having to shift to the other side. And his first start on the left wing for the Springbok. All the others have been on the right wing, and I think there's one game he started at fullback and a couple off the bench. But this is the first one he's starting as a left wing.
Yeah, I think Kanan, I mean, had to be rewarded after that performance in Buenos Aires. And Arke, big one for me is because, you know, with Luit out, that number five spot is pretty much open. We know Marvin Ory can do it. We know that they've entrusted him in a couple of test matches. But Arke has always been sort of the bomb squad guy. He's an incredible athlete and has a great engine in that last 20. But it's going to be interesting to see him come there. I'm sure he can do it. He's an exceptional player. But it's going to be interesting to see how he grabs the opportunity.
Yes, there's no doubt that he's capable of doing it. The slight problem I have with it is I still think his value in the bomb squad gives the Springboks more. So even if you, then it becomes a debate about how many minutes do you give him. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, you can give the guy 40 or 35. Certainly not anything less than that, because you want to squeeze every last bit out of him.
Yeah, and I think the other big, obviously, one that we haven't mentioned is Sia being back. Quite astoundingly, it'll be 119 days since he tore his ACL. That's remarkable, that 4 months that the return to play.
I need to correct you there slightly. Sorry, it was a partial tear, because if it was a full one, you wouldn't
Fair
be
enough.
Playing that.
I'm not a doctor. I'll bow to your medical knowledge. But still, remarkable that he's back on the field in time. And yeah, and we spoke to him on Saturday. He really looked like he was quite confident. And yeah, he didn't look like a guy coming back from injury. And the fact that he's starting shows they've obviously got that confidence in him.
Yeah, and to be fair to him, I mean, he's been confident for a while now. I mean, it's the obvious question whenever you bump into the guy. You know, how are you feeling? Or if you spoke to the two members of the management, they've always been confident that he would make the deadline, and yeah, he's good to go. I mean, it's now just a question of getting the minutes into him and getting properly match fit.
Yeah, and I mean, while we're all going to be concentrating on that, some of the guys who aren't playing there as well, I mean, it becomes, you keep one eye on the squad that's playing, and you also keep one eye on the guys who are not playing. Good for a guy like Eben to get a rest. I think he deserves it. He's had a lot of action this year. And then, yeah, there's some guys under pressure. And I know you had a chat, and we're going to listen to it now, to Makazole Mapimpi. And he's obviously a guy under threat on multiple fronts, not just from one winger, but from the two Bulls wingers, Kurti and Kanan.
Yeah, it's he had a couple of interesting things to say, and in particular, you know, his role in the squad and how the emergence of some of the younger players, you know, tends to, you know, that push them forward. But let's take a listen.
Listen, we all go through social media and my phone every single time I open my phone, afternoon, in the morning, before the training, all of this stuff. I see people talking about me, which is, there's nothing wrong. People have a lot of things to say about another people, which is something that calls all of the world, so I can't stop that. I mean, people can say whatever they want to say. At the same time, the energy that people, negativities that they give me, so for me, it's very good that I can turn that negativity to the positive mindset. I think I said that long time ago, I think 2019, before the World Cup, someone was asking me about how do I keep myself. So I always say to the people, I always watch rugby, also I watch City Cup, so I can pick up the few stuff for the young kids that they're doing that I'm not doing. So the only thing that I can grow up to see, those young guys that are growing up, you know, they're getting in the team, you know, try to push everything just to get the chances, which is, there's nothing wrong. We have to compete at the same time. We're not fighting, but we're just competing as a rugby, so to can make the team better. So I'm very proud of the guys that are coming up. Grant, Caitlin, Moody, Jaden, Manny, all of the guys that are coming in the team. I'm very proud of the guys because they're kind of keeping us at the same time to do better, you know, because they're coming up with good energy, good positive mindset at the same time.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
Okay, so that's Makazola Mapimpi and, his views on the World Cup and what he can bring to the squad and the emergence of the young players. But also on Saturday, Brendan, it's an important game, another box for the Springboks to tick because, you know, a win at in Cardiff brings a bit more momentum. A win next week in London obviously brings a bit more momentum as well. It's a game where there's a little bit of mixing and matching. We're nudging closer to the best available or the best possible 23. But you still want to get a win under your belt.
Yeah, and I think to the Cardiff game is particularly important because we know how the Wales games have gone in the past. They've all been arm wrestles, gone down to the gutter, real dogfights. And I'm quite excited in a way to see, because I think this Bok team may offer something a little bit different. I don't think they're going to. While Wales probably want to play Warren ball and try and keep the box, tight. I think there's some chinks in Wales' armor at the moment that they can exploit. And if the box get running, they can actually score a couple of tries. And obviously, I think, you know, it's easier said than done. But if they do that and they come away with a good win in Cardiff, I think it'd be amazing for them in terms of confidence in that, just because of the mental challenge that Wales also poses to them.
The interesting thing about it is, Cardiff has been a bit of a challenge for the Springboks. The last time they played there, they won, and that they broke a bit of a drought in that game. But to give you an idea of how difficult it's been, Frans Malherbe made his debut there in 2013 at the Principality Stadium, and he hasn't won there since. So, you know, a guy that's played 60 plus tests. He didn't play in 2021, he'd be very keen to chalk off a second win in Cardiff.
Yeah, and just looking at that, I mean, we look at Wales, obviously, played against England. That game on Saturday, I think I saw Martin Gillingham, the commentator, describing it on Twitter as the one game that nobody deserved to win, and it was a bizarre game. It was really a horrible game, and really, if both teams, Wales and England, take that form into the World Cup, they're going to be coming home very, very quickly. But the game was, I suppose, overshadowed quite a bit by another incident. One that we can't believe. I think before we get to it, and I think everyone knows what incident we're talking about, the Owen Farrell incident. The one thing with that world, with he got off scot free from, they downgraded his red card to a yellow card. If you missed that, if you were somewhere under a hole and you missed that, but the one thing he has done, he's united rugby media, rugby pundits, rugby fans across the world, and that's no easy feat. And even the English guys are saying it's ludicrous. So Augustin Pichot saying it was a joke. And when you compare it to George Moalo with a tip tackle who got 10 weeks, and Xander Ferguson who got 3 weeks down to two. Yeah, my whole point is, I'm just going to make one point before I let you answer. My whole point is, how do you explain to a player that gets, like Oxenchair, who gets 3 weeks for an accidental head clash, that 3 weeks is the appropriate sentence when a guy like a repeat serial offender like Owen Farrell gets away with murder and gets off scot-free?
Okay, getting away with murder. Yeah. Strong words there, Brendan. But yeah, look, it is becoming a little bit farcical. For me, it's quite simple. I mean, the explanation was that the Jamie George tackle changed the dynamic of the entire incident in that, you know, then the Welsh player falls into Farrell or whatever. For me, the standout thing is Farrell's body position. At no point does he present himself as a player that's going to be making a legal tackle. So if the onus is on the tackler to make a legal tackle, and you look at that picture, you look at that image, then you have to conclusively say that, no, the guy is not in a position to make that tackle or a legal tackle. And for that, he should be sanctioned. So it's, yeah, a beggar's belief. But this is where we are. And hopefully the World Cup doesn't get afflicted by this kind of nonsense. Because, frankly, it's very difficult for us as rugby media to explain then to the public, this is how it works when it's wildly inconsistent in the way they arrive at some of these decisions.
I think you being understating when you're saying wildly inconsistent. I think that's the thing that frustrates us all. And I think you're right. Owen Farrell tends to get many rugby fans and many South Africans hot under the collar. You remember Andre Estes and the hit on him that he got away with as well. And the way he celebrated afterwards, I think, made it even worse. But you're right. I mean, there's this whole talk about tackle height in the club game, and which is causing a lot of, you know, unhappiness around the world. And they say, you're saying to people in the club game, you must tackle waist high, but you let this go away and go in the professional game, which makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on this too long, but for me the point is, even if you forget what color jersey he's wearing or for who he's playing, what position he plays in, what his name is, who his father is, how many times he's been in the crosshairs of referees or officialdom for similar things, even if you take all of that out of the equation and you just looked at that incident on Saturday, you'd have to arrive at the conclusion that, wow, this guy deserves red and possibly a lot more.
Yeah, and I think that your point is valid. I think the World Rugby's protocols for head contact make it quite clear there's no mitigation if the tackle is not legal in the first place. And I think that's what it comes down to. That's the bottom line. And it's a travesty. It's ludicrous. And, yeah, I don't know how World Rugby is going to get themselves out of this hole, but it's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, on a brighter note, later that day, France played Scotland in Saint-Étienne, and that was, in terms of spectacle, something at least that was worth watching from a pure rugby perspective. Don't you agree, Brendan?
Yeah, no, I do. I quite enjoy both teams' attitudes to the game. I mean, and France scored some amazing tries from nowhere, and that's what makes them such fun to watch, especially this France team under Fabien Galtier. I think Scotland, I thought the game was over when it was 27-13 to France, and I was starting to fall asleep. It was late at night. I had a bit of red wine in. But, yeah, suddenly Scotland came back, and it made it such an exciting end to that game. They're going to be a handful at the World Cup. They're not going to be easy. And I think anyone who watched that game can understand why Rossi and Jacques and all of them have been talking about Scotland as their big game and not Ireland, because if they don't get past Scotland, they're in big trouble.
Look, it's obviously a big box for them to tick. They need to win that game to get to Paris and the game against Ireland, where it doesn't become a playoff game. If they lose, then, you know, effectively out of the tournament. So from that perspective, firstly, it's important that they win the opening game in Marseille. If you look at Scotland, if you look at France and what we kind of knew about them before Saturday's game, I mean, they played to script. Scotland were quite happy to retain possession, take the ball through the phases. I thought they were quite proficient at the ruck again. So there was a lot of continuity and phase play, and they did very well in that department. That game also showed us that France are quite happy to be without the ball often. They would kick it away, and they would have these moments in the game where they flick a switch and somebody spots a gap or some space, and off they go. And more, very often, actually, they find the space and they score. We saw that in that game. So I think they played to type. It was, in that sense, a fairly predictable game. Not necessarily a predictable result, given the lead that France built up sort of early in the second half, because they came back after the break and they flicked that switch and they looked fantastic. And then, of course, a couple of substitutions, and then the catastrophic injury to Romain Intermac, which is a huge blow to them. That also then changed the dynamic of the game.
Yeah, I mean, Intermac's a massive blow for them. And I think Cyril Bay as well. I mean, that's also the other big one for them as well. But in Intermac, they've at least got Jalibert, who can come in as well, who is pretty much an international quality fly-off. So I don't think it'd be interesting how it changes the dynamic of their play. But I thought also the one part the box could probably target Scotland on was their scrum. I thought their scrum was a bit brittle. And even though there are a couple of South Africans in that, especially on the reserve bench, there was a bit, you know, when they came on, there was a couple of wonky scrums. And yeah, and I think the set pieces the box can do well. But Scotland are definitely a team that aren't going to go away. They're going to be in your faces the whole time. Yeah. And it's the same thing I think we've spoken about before we did this podcast a number of years ago. Scotland are the type of team that you have to almost kill off early. You have to hit them hard and you have to hit them early and sort of almost take the game away from them, because they are a team that lives on hope. And they're much better than the Scottish sides that have played in previous years. And they're very all-rounded and a lot of South African influence there.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, I thought of other matches France played against Scotland where they would also have the initiative early, but they don't put them away and they leave the door ajar and somehow Scotland find a way back in, whether it's through a French red card or a couple of silly errors. But you're right, they don't go away, and the box would have to be fairly clinical against them and sort of squeeze the life out of them. Otherwise, you don't want to get into a fight in the gutters with them. That's not what you want.
I think one thing we just have to mention just before we leave the box is the fact that there have been, since we did our podcast last week, a lot of conspiracy theories going around and a lot of talk on social media. So much so that Jacques had to address it on Saturday and sort of opened his press conference with that. Before I get into it, I'm just going to say the one thing that the box probably did themselves no favors was the way that they spoke about Andre Pollard's injuries. The fact that they sort of almost made it sound as if he could come into the squad. But Jacques made it very clear that the 33 is the 33, and unless there's an injury, there's going to be no changes to that squad. That doesn't stop Andre from obviously returning to fitness, returning to play, and being ready in case there's an injury. And I think that's the bottom line. But yeah, listen to him, what he said on Saturday to us, and you make up your own mind.
I think there's lots of rumors flying around about the squad and about the injured players, and we've got this plot that we take four nines and we're going to get Andre in and stuff like that. And I think one must start and explain it and maybe take some time. If there's no injuries, guys, this whole 33 will come back. And the thing about Andre is currently not injured, but Andre, in terms of his obvious injury, he trained with us now for two sessions. So he is still on his way back. Over the 6 years, and I don't want to get too scientific, maar ek dink ek moet dit verduidelik, want anders gaan daar rumors bly. So let's say a player X who plays in a position, fly off, loose forward. We've got 6 years of data. What he needs to do during a week to give us an opportunity to win on Saturday. And that might be metrics like how many kilometers he's covered, how much high-speed running has he done. High-speed running is above 5 to 6 meters per second. How many acceleration and decelerations he needs to perform during a week to get him ready to perform physically on Saturday. And I think if you look at Andre currently, he is probably at about 20-25%. He's only done two sessions with us. And it's almost like I'm saying you need to run a comrades in 3 weeks. But listen, you only start 3 weeks before that, and you have to perform in that comrades, and you can only train 10Ks a week. Will you make it? You might make it. You might. You might walk and make it. Yes, but it will be luck. You get what I'm saying. That's why I say Andre is, the other two guys are injured. Luke is injured. He's got an injury, and he is still in the process of recovering from the injury. Then if he's recovered from the injury, then he'll go into, okay, return to play. Andre is recovered from the injury. He's now in return to play. But we can press him now and make him do 100% of, he's probably doing 20-25% of what a guy like Marnie or Gaza is currently doing during a week, and then they play a test match. He's currently operating at about 25-30, maybe 50% at most. We can push him to 80, but I promise you, we'll probably, the risk of us then losing him in the next 3 to 4 weeks, it will be 80%, 90%. So it's a numbers game.
You're with Liam Delcom and Brendan Nell on the To The Last Drop podcast.
So you've got to say, Brendan, yeah, you're right. They didn't do themselves any favors with the messaging there. And in fact, even before the squad was announced, I mean, the entire injury situation was shrouded in mystery for the longest time. And you just got the impression, like, at what point did they know this was not going to happen? In other words, he wasn't going to be fit for selection and the criteria they set out for selection for the World Cup squad. So, you know, it was in some ways it's their own making. But, I mean, people at social media, I mean, people jump to their own conclusions. It's the easiest thing to do. But I also thought that the messaging around the injury, you know, that could have been dealt with a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing is I look at the human cost always. I mean, you know, you got to think the message it sends to somebody like Marnie Lubbock, who's done exceptionally well in his 7 tests so far for the Springboks, really hasn't let them down. Has one or two kicks that he missed, but overall you can say he was pretty good. You know, and he's sitting there watching this, and it sounds like the whole country doesn't want him to play. I always feel that for those guys, and people don't care about those things. They go on their own tangents, and yet. We've got to realize that over the last couple of years, Jacques and them have created a lot of depth in the squad in a number of positions. And that's going to be key for them winning the World Cup again, if they're going to win the World Cup. And it won't be down to one player.
Yeah, but if you think about it, while they have, you know, they've built depth in their squad, the one position they probably neglected a bit is probably fly-off, because they invested so much in the fact that if Pollard's fit, he's our guy at the World Cup. And whoever plays, you know, against Romania or against Tonga, you know, that's a different matter. But when it comes to the games that need to be won at all costs at the World Cup, you know, that the expectation has always been that that's Andre Pollard would play those games. So in that sense also, it's, you know, probably the problem is there of their making. However, I'd say that in the last, you said 7 games, I mean, Marnie Lubbock has played as well as you can reasonably expect him to play. And to be fair to him, I mean, if you look at his form for the Stormers, he's been very consistent. He's obviously had a couple of blips against Munster last season. But apart from that, he's been consistent. So if you talk about form and consistent form now, I mean, he obviously deserves, you know, to be the starting fly-off until proven wrong. I mean, that's the way I look at it. Obviously, there's Damien Willems as well. Brings a completely different dynamic. But for me, given the pressures of a World Cup, your most reliable goalkeeper needs to be on the park.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, I think just to your point, they did try. I mean, they did try Johan Kuss, and they had Sasha Ngumzulu Feinberg, who also is maybe a bit young to have made this World Cup. But yeah, I mean, they've tried other guys as well, but no one's really stuck their hand up. We've got to be honest. I mean, guy like, who else is there in the country? Chris Smith, Kerwin Bosch. These aren't guys. I think Jordan Hendrickse, if he wasn't injured and he had a full season, might have, you know, maybe knocked on that door a bit.
Yeah.
But other than that, there hasn't been anybody that they really could pick. So you've got to feel for them. And times, any coach will tell you this, at times you've got to play the team you have. You don't always get your perfect team with your strongest players, etc., due to injuries and other things. You've got to play with what you have.
And I suppose this is where losing 2020 as a calendar year comes into play, because if you were going to groom somebody else as a reliable backup, that probably would have been the year where you introduced the bloke and sort of put him through his paces. But as it turned out, we had to play Georgia and then go into a Lions series that was very much a must-win series. So the scope for that initially probably wasn't there.
Well, the Pretoria guy in me says Mornay Steyn probably could still do it, but yeah, he's still... I see you shaking your head, Liam. But I reckon, and I think there's probably a couple of people out there that agree with me, Mornay probably still could do it. But yeah, I think now, I mean, we passed that point. It doesn't help holding on to those things.
There's no doubt that if you need a kick to be landed, he can do it. There's that, but I have no doubt about it.
Yeah. I think the big thing, the interesting one, just to close off this topic, would be Elton Yankees and the fact that, you know, Elton has been part of the squad. And then obviously last year, all those off-field incidents happened. And he sort of fell out of favor, and then he went to Power, and then he's come back as sort of like the fourth fly-off on standby because of Pollard. But when Pollard didn't make the squad, he's sort of out on it. And I saw our colleague Hendrik Cronier wrote a story that Elton believed that it was because of a car accident that he had, etc. I just think the boxer probably lost confidence in him in terms of being in the squad. And, yeah, I mean, he's a guy with almost 50 tests. He should be able to step in if there's a real emergency, if things go really wrong at this World Cup. But it's just interesting how that fall from grace has gone.
Yeah, I always got the impression that when they brought him into the squad, you know, what was it, a month and a half ago, whatever it was, that he was like that guy that arrives at a party and he comes through the door and he looks around and everybody else is having a good time, but he's sort of just hovering at the door. He's not really making himself, you know, part of it. And that's kind of where he stayed. And then at some point he was like, pointed to the door again and then left. So, yeah, I think in that sense the ship has sailed for him. You'd have to have a situation where there are, you know, a number of injuries for him to get back in, because I think they will exhaust all the potential in the squad before they turn to him.
Yeah, I think the best thing for Elton now, if he wants to still be part of the box squad, there's talk of him signing at the Lions again. That'd be interesting to see how that negotiation goes, because he didn't have the best relationship with the Lions when he left. Come back to South Africa, play rugby in South Africa, get your name on everyone's lips again, and then, you know, make a choice. Yeah, but at the end of the day, he's not going to make this World Cup unless, as you say, there's some really disastrous injuries, and let's hope there's not for that as well. That's nothing on Elton. We just hope that the team doesn't obviously suffer all those injuries in the defence of their title. So, I think that's about it for this week. We'll talk next week after the Wales test. A lot of other games happening, going into All Black Week next week. Liam, you looking forward to that All Black game? Or does it take away from it that it's a warm-up game?
Even before we get to that game, I mean, I've now reached a point where I watch these warm-up games and I'm almost more tense than I would be for, a World Cup game, because there is the fear of injury, because we've seen a number of guys now go down, and it's never good. You kind of like watch the quality of the rugby, but then also you feel for, you know, when a guy stays down, and you just hope that it doesn't turn out bad. But yeah, that All Black game certainly would be one to look forward to.
Yeah, I must admit, I can't wait for the World Cup to start now. I think we must get to that point. I think it's that pre-season, it almost feels like the pre-season before Super Rugby type thing. You just want the games to actually start, the actual tournament. So yeah, and I'm also obviously fearful for injuries for guys. But yeah, that's it, guys. Join us again next week. We'll have much more to chat. And if this week was anything to go by, a bumper-packed show again.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.